Blog Talk Radio.
Mi accorgo dallo sha. Senti fiamo cielo. E se tu vengi da posa. Senti se te pela no muevo.
Welcome to Zambia Blog Talk Radio. This is Saturday, September the 10th, 2016. We've gone almost three quarters way of the year, and we're glad that you decided to join us. It's 1700 hours in Zambia, 4 p.m. in the UK. I believe it's 11 p.m. in Western Australia, and it's 10 a.m. in Dallas, Texas, where I am. I'll be your host this morning, and my name is Nathan Nkama. We welcome everybody listening to us from wherever you are, those that have called in and those listening online. We do appreciate your time and commitment to follow what we do every day and following us on this interesting program. This morning, we are honored and privileged to have a gentleman, distinguished gentleman, a Zambian, a patriot. I'm looking forward to this discussion. In life, you have people who have the opportunity and privilege to be close to leaders, whether it's in a community, whatever capacity or situation. And the gentleman that we are going to be talking to had some very interesting interactions and a form of a relationship with the founding president of UPND. The late Mr. Anderson Mazoka, and he wrote an article in Lusaka Times entitled "You Reap What You Sow: Lessons from Zambia's Elections," and that just prompted me to look for Dr. Nyirenda and to get him to come to the show and to find out what was going on in his mind. So this morning we are greatly honored to have Dr. Joshua Nyirenda from Richmond, Virginia, and he's joining us on the show. Dr. Nyirenda, good morning.
Good morning, Pastor Nathan. I'm very grateful for your invitation for me to speak on this forum. I would like to start with a disclaimer that, of course, I do not claim to have the monopoly on, either what ails us as a nation or what the direction we should be taking, but my hope is that this will be a contribution to the start of a wider national debate on what we can do as individuals and what we can do as a country to strengthen our national institutions. So once again, I'm very grateful to feature on your program, and I'm looking forward to the discussion. Thanks.
Excellent. And on that note, to add on to what Dr. Nyirenda said, Dr. Nyirenda is in no way the spokesperson or representative of UPND, Dr. Miranda is in no way speaking on behalf of UPND. What we are doing and what I would like to encourage everybody out there, I know most of us have got laptops, tablets, whatever you have in your hands. Go to Lusaka Times, just type Dr. Joshua Nyirenda in the search, and it will bring up his article. You reap what you sow, lessons from Zambia's election. And this is based on this article that our discussion is on today. I also want to thank my big brother, Dr. Kalonde, also for playing a role and facilitating in us getting Dr. Nyirenda to come on the show. Dr. Kalonde, good morning.
Yes, welcome, Dr. Nyirenda. Thank you for appearing on the show. And we really look forward to learning more about your insights with regard to the situation that prevails back home and your relationship with the leadership in Zambia. Although Mr. Mazoka did not become a president, he has left a watermark in Zambia whereby it's a legacy that will go on forever, I should think, in terms of who tried to lead Zambia and who started the UPND as a party. Thank you so much, Dr. Nyirenda.
Thank you so much. The pleasure is mine.
Excellent. At a certain stage, Dr. Nyirenda, I believe it's your sister, Monica, called in actually, and she's going to call back in again from Zambia.
Oh, interesting.
Yes, so we're looking forward to this discussion. Let's begin by sort of getting from you what prompted you to write this article.
Okay, that's a very interesting question. So basically, I came to the conviction that I was getting concerned with the tone of politics in our country, certain things that seem to be holding us back as a nation. I came to the conviction that we as a country, both individually and collectively, have a part to play through either our past actions that brought us to where we are, and also through that what we do today shapes our future. So I essentially drew on the adage of you reap what you sow to deliver that message. Now, I was aware that this may be a tough time to bring that kind of message because we are in a time when we actually need to, start a healing process. But I also did realize that some lessons are best learned while you're in the heat of the moment, when the wounds are still hurting. And that time buffers sometimes let people and let us forget the great consequences of our actions because we are not as close to when the hurt, pain the most. So that's essentially what was going through my mind. And, I realized that as an individual, I have a part to play in that as well. So I wrote it with the perspective that, this is a process of learning for all of us, not just where I'm on the pulpit preaching to the church, but that I am as well, as an individual needs to be part of that learning process.
I agree with you because, you see, Dr. Nyirenda, and I'm glad we started with this question because when you read the headline, some people tend to, their minds are already changed to look at it in a certain way because it may appear like you are trying to say, hey, guys, it's like I'm trying to say that it's like you are trying to hit at the current people in government and things like that. To the contrary, to all that. So, if I may, we may get into the historical perspective of where you are coming from. Share with us and our listening audience, based on what you can remember. What were the circumstances which led to the formation of UPND? You can probably even give us a background of where Mazoka was at that stage in his political career.
Okay, so I was a student at the University of Zambia when Mazoka formed the party. And I remember that the audience that we gave to him as students at UNSA, if I'm not mistaken, was the one of the first audiences he used to actually intimate to the fact that he was going to form a party. And so from his explanation, and it's basically from that I got sold into the idea to want to follow him and support him. But from his explanation, he attempted to use the MMD structure to chart his political career by starting to, he attempted to start as a councillor in Baoleni or something like that, because you remember his Kumalende residence is in the Leopards Hill area. So he, I think, wanted to start out as a councillor in Baoleni. But what happened is it appears, or at least he says, that he was frustrated in those efforts by some, party leadership in the MMD who saw him as a threat. Because, of course, he had some financial muscle, and so they saw him as a threat and frustrated him from all the attempts that he tried to make to engage in the political process using the MMD platform. So he got frustrated, and so he decided to form the UPND to advance his vision and desire for national service. Now you'll recall that he was with Anglo-American Corporation before that, and he resigned his very lucrative job to begin that process, and that was very inspiring. And I think that's a background that I can give about what transpired to to where he was. And I may go into detail in some of the following questions that you may have.
Can you share how, when he started, how was, of course, like you have rightly put it, he came to UNSA, addressed the students, and sort of to rally. Number one, why do you think he started with the university students? And how did he structure his party differently from MMD? The reason I ask that question is that you tend to notice that when people leave something, they go start something, they basically just become a miniature of what they are leaving. How did the Mazoka avoid that? I don't know if you're able to address that.
So most people that form parties will test different venues with the ideas that they have. And you'll agree that universities tend to be a starting point where people can sort of experiment with the ideas and to test the waters to see if people that are the intellectual leaders in the country can in fact buy into the proposals that you have. And so he came there essentially to sell out his vision, to sort of sell out his plans. And I mean, most politicians will recognize that UNSA students in the political history of the country have played a pivotal role in pushing certain political movements. I mean, notably the Kaunda issue that resulted in the birth of the multi-party, the movement of multi-party democracy, and him conceding to allowing multi-party democracy. And also the third term debate that Chiluba wanted to extend his term. Students were also pivotal in that. But from the way that Mazoka organized himself, from my observation, was that he sought to sell his vision to like-minded individuals. And his approach was mostly based on message, a message of economic revitalization. If you recall, this was after the country experienced a harsh IMF structure adjustment programs under the MMD. And so people from all walks of life, students, Caponias and all those kinds of people started buying into that. He had a a tendency to draw heavy intellectuals as well. And his team became one of the most intellectual powerhouses you could find in a party. You had people like Dr. John Mulwila, Sakweva Sikota, you know, Love Mtesa. You know, even Bob Sichinga, you know, a blend of seasoned politicians and economists. He really had a good team. So I think he was smart to know what he needed, and he was smart to know what kind of people he needed to help him support his vision and his goals, both in terms of like political ends and also economic objectives. He was that way, and I think he did some good homework in doing that.
Excellent. In your article, Dr. Nyirenda, you've clearly stated that the UPND branch at UNSA was an underground branch. Can you explain that? Why was it an underground branch?
So that's an interesting question. So there was really nothing sinister about the UNSA UPND branch being an underground branch. It was more a precautionary strategy to protect our interests and belongings that we as the party activists and student activists advancing the cause of the UPND on campus decided to take. You will recall... it was a precautionary strategy to essentially protect our interests and belongings. You will recall that in the early years of its reign, the MMD carried over the culture of party vigilantes from the UNIP era. And so we had some students within campus who were known to be agents of the ruling MMD and the intelligence wing, which you remember they were also known as Shushushu. So we actually had cases of student rooms being set on fire or students being clobbered at night because of political affiliation. So we had to be smart about the way that we organized, or else we could have potentially suffered some significant losses or harm. So this was more to protect ourselves. Now, that's not to say that students were not free to, you know, wear party regalia on campus to identify with certain organizations. I mean, we went around dressing in UPND T-shirts, etc. But the issue was, if you were identified as a leader who was mobilizing those people, then you were at risk of retaliation and all those kinds of things that I talked about, being beaten or having your property burned, etc.
So how did you manage to keep that, if I may further push that point, how did you manage to keep it under tabs or not being identified as the leaders of UPND? And can you also comment to the fact that it seems history is repeating itself here, Dr. Nyirenda, with what we have seen in the current election, where if somebody wears a particular party's regalia, they are in trouble, people were beaten, and things like that. I don't know what your observations are here on that.
Well, you know, I think first, getting to a point of how we managed to go in stealth mode where people wouldn't know who we were, I think it was more a strategy where we all identified ourselves as UPND, well, not... you know, by way of, you know, dressing up and things like that. But the strategy was not to let them know who the leader was. So we would be a group of people, but they wouldn't really identify or pinpoint who it was that was the leader. So I think we were successful in doing that. But I don't know whether it was sheer luck or that we were good at doing it. But getting to your point on being beaten because of wearing party regalia, I think we have a culture of intolerance in our country that we really need to address. And I'm hoping that maybe as we go along in this conversation, that's something that we may delve into some more. But But we do have a problem of intolerance, which manifests itself in different ways, even, you know, at the political level, at the tribe level, in different ways.
Yeah, it's true. We continue our conversation with our featured guest, Dr. Joshua Nyirenda, who is the author of an article entitled "You Reap What You Sow: Lessons from Zambia's Elections." If you search on Lusaka Times, you will find it. At one point, we shall allow those that have called in who would like to send your comments or questions on Facebook to do so. But first, let me recognize also another special guest here joining us, because Dr. Nyirenda is with us here. La Monica, good evening. Roger, is she there?
I think so. Miss Nyirenda, are you there? Oh, I guess she dropped. Okay, I'll try and get her back.
Okay, I just wanted to recognize her and also to just let her know that she can get ready to chime in or comment, especially when we start talking on issues to do with current affairs. Dr. Nyirenda, back to our discussion. What did you mean by saying, and I quote, "I used to be an ardent follower of Anderson Mazoka"? What particularly struck you about him?
Okay, now that's something that is very interesting, because I'm very passionate about my view of the great son of the land, Anderson Mazoka. Now, Anderson Mazoka was a rare politician that I think we don't find in many people these days. He had a rare combination of political wits as well as economic credentials. He was charismatic and he was very convincing. He had an impeccable and attractive, he had attractive credentials, which made him, you know, a very attractive candidate. He, you know, he went to school in Northern Province, where he met people like somebody who became his vice president, Dr. John Mulwila. He was a Western-trained engineer. He was CEO at Zambia Railway at some point, and then he became a powerful, you know, player at the Anglo-American Corporation as well. And he, you know, so the prospect of having a first graduate man with first-hand experience with managing the economy in Zambia at ZR, you know, Zambia Railways, and also Anglo-American, made him, you know, a very good fit for the economy, for the needs that we had at the moment. But more than that, he was he was a people person. He was smart at reading the mood. He was he got along with people very well, such that even people that were against him could not find many reasons to, you know, to insult him or to, you know, to be against him. I think it came more out of malice than out of what he said or how he carried himself. He was very presidential in the way that he carried himself.
Okay.
His charisma and his charisma was very convincing, and I think for me that for him, that combination, the rare combination of both political political smartness and also book smartness and economic credentials, I think that was very attractive to me.
Okay. And I like what you say, carried himself presidential, which brings me to the next question. I'm even laughing. You have also said that you are convinced Mazoka would have been one of Zambia's greatest presidents. Somebody skeptical who may say, how do you know that? I mean, we didn't get to see him become president, like to refer to Dr. Kalonde's comment also, who said even though he never became president, I mean, he held high-profile positions. How do you know that, Dr. Nyirenda? Because that office has got there's just something that office does to people. I mean, I don't know how you respond to a skeptic about that.
That's a very brilliant question. Of course, you know, death has a way of closing people's chapters so that they are, you know, even the Catholic Church makes sense after people are dead because they don't have an opportunity to mess up afterwards, I guess. but of course, you know, of course, we don't have the benefit of looking at Mazoka's performance record. And similarly, we could say that had Arthur Weiner, not Chiluba, become president of the UPND and maybe gone on to become the president, we probably would have speculatively claimed that Chiluba would have made the best president. But here's why I think Mazoka would have been the best president. He had a good grasp on economic issues, and he understood limitations of the free market system, which Chiluba adopted hook, line, and sinker, and even went on vacation. Mazoka had the credentials to effectively manage our country and prosper it. You know, sometimes we think that corruption is the biggest problem in our economy. You know, I beg to differ. I think it is the magnitude of our corruption in proportion to the size of our economy that is a problem. You know, see, corruption exists all over the world. It is just that in proportion to the size of the economies of, say, America, it's not devastating. You know, so I believe that people who can focus on doubling or tripling the size of our economy while taming the spread of corruption can achieve progress for the country. Corruption is a result of man's fallen nature, and it will always exist to varying degrees. So while I cannot speak to how Mazoka would have handled corruption, which is something that pervades our society, I'm confident that he would have set course for Zambia's tremendous economic growth. So more like increasing the size of the pie so that the proportion of corruption in comparison to the size of the economy is not so big that it makes things, it destabilizes the economy.
That's an interesting phenomenon right there. I like that. I'm also one person who's also a proponent that corruption exists everywhere. In other countries, which we won't mention names, but the statement I'll make, people will identify where that belongs. In other places, they call it interest groups. That's the word is used in other places of the world. Let's move on here. My colleagues will jump in whenever they want to ask you a question, but I want to learn as much.
Sure, Nathan.
Go ahead.
Maybe very quickly. Very quickly, I would like to ask a question. Dr. Nyirenda, my name is Roger here in Alberta, Canada. I'm trying to relate the discussion, first and foremost, to President Mazoka. I'm sure as we speak, there is somehow some inference to UPND today under HH, which in my view is not being discussed. I don't know if you are going to get there as we go. So under what you discussed in your topic, how do you relate the two, Mr. Mazoka and UPND under HH?
Let me think about that for a second. It's interesting because I mean I think the two are very different, you know, the two are different people, and you know, so I guess I would answer that question by maybe saying, you know, how has the party, you know, veered from his vision, or how have they maintained it, or how have they performed since he
okay. I think our guest has dropped.
Oh, okay. We lost our guest. Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm sure he's going to call back in. Everybody, good morning. Dr. Kalonde, Bayama Batsebwe. Dr. Kalonde, I like the point he has made about, as he calls back in, the point corruption is is, what is he trying to say? It's like it's the corruption level is too huge in proportion to the size of our economy. I don't know what your comment is.
What my comment is?
Yeah, on that statement
yeah,
you made. I know it's
There are a few things that I've got from Dr. Nyirenda. That is true. And at the same time, like you said about interest groups, you see, corruption becomes so prominent in every country because the way it's done. People see somebody who at the bicycle, he has 11 cars. I can give an example of our brother, me and I was in Matero. All of a sudden, he became rich with a lot of vehicles. So those things point to corruption. Now, here in other countries that are developed, we have these interest groups that are controlled by the constitution, and whenever they do things, they do things knowing that corruption exists. Why not legislate it in a way that it takes place, and then they tell you, you can only donate this much, you see?
Mm-hmm.
This is how things have, yes, this is how things have been done here, whereby they will ask you to donate. They will ask you what you got out of it, and even campaign for a company, pharmaceuticals and all such things. Now, there's one question that I wanted to ask you, Anirenda. Maybe when he comes back, you'd ask him in terms of what Charlie has mentioned, the relationship between the two parties now. It's one party, but it looks different. When Mazoka was president and now HH is president. My answer to that question, actually, my answer to that question is that how these two rose to power, that's what makes a huge difference, actually. Mazoka
we will discuss that. He is going to discuss that. Now, the other thing that I want to mention to everybody, those that have called in listening online, when we were preparing for this interview, this is what we agreed upon. We are trying to be careful not to look like we are trying to undermine or bash HH. It's a very thin line in the circumstances and the prevailing situation back home. Because what I wanted him to do is basically to share his interaction, number one, with his interaction with Anderson Mazoka, and how the party
will make the discussion mute, so to say. If he just wants to compare to the past, without any reference. To what is on the ground, he may want to be careful. But whatever he said, just looking at the title, it is addressing the present too. So unless he doesn't want to talk about the present, but that will make the discussion not very meaningful, so to say. So he has to probably
we'll get into some things. Yeah, we'll try to get into some things. I don't know. He says he's having problems calling back in. okay. At times this happens when you drop and all those things.
Yeah, I think
okay.
He's back.
Yeah. Okay, Dr. Nyirenda, can you remember where you ended and what you were going to say in response to Roger's question?
Okay, so I think we were trying to talk about... HH and Mazoka, and to see how the two compare. I'll probably just try and say what I said from the beginning, so that I won't know where I dropped off, so people may have the advantage of knowing or hearing all that I said. So I started out with saying that, you know, I'm not in a position to have a very good informed position concerning the question that he asked. And so I was going to maybe And that's more because I'm not as actively involved in politics as I was in the past, and so I'm more or less like an observer from the distance. And so from my observation, I will try and say, okay, from where Mazoka left and, you know, what is being seen now, and seeing maybe a few comparisons and seeing where we stand. From observation, I think that the political intelligence that Mazoka had, that uh-huh. element has been lost. Because Mazoka was very good at reading the national mood and reacting appropriately in a way that didn't alienate people while he conducted his political business. And he was a hardly annoying politician. He was likable even to people that, you know, didn't support him or follow him. He was, he was charming. He was a handsome man. But above all, he was a true statesman who truly cared for the welfare of the nation. He was, you know, very humble and yet, you know, very accomplished. So in comparison, what I concluded with is to say that I think in as much as HH may still embody the economic credentials that Mazoka had, I think he's been somewhat lacking on the political way that Mazoka put people alongside with him in terms of gathering people around him. Like I mentioned earlier, it was when you differed with Mazoka, for the most part, it was because people were just trying to scandalize him rather than because he said something and so people are reacting to what he said or that he annoyed them or angered them. So I think that's where the political calculations right now have a little bit maybe not been as impressive. So I end with a disclaimer that this is only an observation from the distance. I'm not on the ground, so I may not be the best person to answer that question.
Okay, let's deal with something which has been an issue with UPND. Where did this perception, Dr. Nyirenda, of UPND being a tribal party come from? Which, in your article, you said you actually did address, I don't want to say confront, you did address with Mr. Mazoka, and mm-hmm. how did the discussion go? How did your discussion with him go when you decided to discuss the issue of UPND being a tribal party? Where mm-hmm. did it come mm-hmm. from? Where did the perception come from?
Okay, I think that's again another good question. So, you know, when you form a political party, a political movement, you inevitably need any vote that you can get to propel you to the finish line. Uh-huh. You know, and some interest groups within that mobilization process can become so vocal that they overshadow the primary message. The ascendancy of Mazoka, who has, without reservation, said that was a very talented man, excited his tribesmen, and of course I do not blame them for it. I think every one of his tribesmen needed to be proud of his achievement. In fact, every Zambian should be proud of having a man like him as a fellow countryman, a son of the land. However, the excitement that his tribesmen was so overtly expressed that it concerned some people who were contemplating to join the cause. You know, so as we went around trying to mobilize for the party, the strongest resistance we encountered concerning Mazoka was, with the tribalism allegation and the Freemason tag that Mazoka had. Now, on a personal level, as a Christian, I was more bothered by the Freemasonry tag, you know.
Okay.
But I think when we went to ask him, he convinced me on both, you know, both the tribalism and the Mason tag. He explained that, you know, he founded the party not based on tribalism, not based on tribe, but that, you know, people of his tribe unsolicited grouped around him, and he was quick to say that, you know what, we can't send them away because they are people of my tribe, and we'll need whoever we can get to get to the cause that we want to achieve, you know. So so he was very convincing in that, and he was very convincing in how he expressed patriotism and a vision for a united and prosperous Zambia. And if you recall, this was even evidenced in the national character of his national management committee, which was right from the beginning, not where it was meant to create an impression of tribal balance. But I mean, this was something that he did right from the beginning. And like I mentioned, you know, even at the point of during Mazoka's time, the tribal and Freemason tags are the ones that alienated a lot of people. But what complicated things for the party is, you know, I think the way that HH ascended to power.
That was going to be my next question.
Yeah, it didn't help matters. When, you know, he emerged out of nowhere to succeed Mazoka using a quite parochial and divisive campaign, which essentially ignored the leadership structures that that Mazoka left in place, which were the intuitive structures that, you know, normal organizations would have taken to consider people to take over from Mazoka.
Okay. Let's go a little bit deeper with that HH ascendancy to power. I can see somebody out there listening is like, you just glossed over it. How did HH ascend to the presidency of UPND, Dr. Nyirenda?
Okay, so the time that HH was ascending to power, I came to the U.S. in 2002, and I think by that time I'd already kind of disengaged from the political process. So what I know about what transpired was more out of second-hand information. But it appears that HH sort of exploited the tribal sentiments, you know, that his tribesmen were saying, you know, only a Tonga can take over. Now, this is not to say that he himself said that, but, you know, I had friends who had similar elements even as I was mobilizing, you know, the UPND. But, you know, when it's lower in the ranks, it's not it's not as important, but when it gets to a national level committee and those sentiments are being aired, I think it's the duty of the leadership to disown those sentiments. But I think entertained them to his political advantage and rode on that to ascend to power. Now, again, this is from what we heard about people who went to attend, from some of the inside information from friends who were close who attended, and also from reports that were, you know, widely circulated. So, I mean, it was a controversial election because, but you know, natural processes would have required that people like Sakwiba Sikota or Bob Sichinga you know, there were a lot of other people within the party who were in a more merited position to you know, run and even gain that. But I mean, he was harassed. Sakwiba was harassed, and, you know, eventually lost, and all those kinds of things, which didn't reflect well on the party. And I think that was unfortunate. And I mean, they've done quite a bit to try and launder that that image over time. But yeah, that's the reality about how you know, he came into power.
Interesting. Okay, let me ask one more question before I allow my colleagues to come in. They have, when you dropped, they told me they have some burning questions. I hope they won't burn you. I'm joking. I don't know. Tell me your views about this notion of Mwanawasa having stolen the election, or it was rigged. I know the circumstances then were different. We didn't have the PVT, for those listening, parallel voter tabulation, which I believe was brought in by late President Sata's insistence on the 2011 election. I mean, I can be corrected on that. Okay, so where did this thing have, this thing about Mwanawasa having stolen the election from, do we have any evidence about that, on the rigging, on the election being stolen? I don't know what.
Okay, so, you know, there is no hard evidence that, you know, rigging took place. However, there were, you know, there are all indications that it did, however. And there were structures that were porous, so porous that that kind of thing could have happened at the time.
Yes.
And I say so because there were discrepancies between the Central Tabulation Center, you know, and the lack of transparency and representation of political parties in some rural and remote areas where the allegations of the rigging mostly took place. Now, I've also spoken to several people, both locally and internationally, you know, who have alluded to that election having been rigged. But, you know, probably people like Chungu, Xavier Chungu, Chulu, and Maureen Mwanawasa would be the best people to who had that exclusive information who would know. What is clear, however, like you mentioned, is that the system we have now, the parallel vote tabulation system, which is a result of the concerns that came out of that process, and also the system of putting a time limitation to petitions post elections, which we've just now had some challenges with the 14-day limitation, also came from that. From that system, because what happened is even after Mazoka had challenged that election, it took like 2 years before the case was even adjudicated on, you know, which basically made it a meaningless process. But what I also do understand is that I understand where the perpetual distrust and paranoia from the opposition, including the UPND, stems from, but the difference between the 2001 election and the ones that followed after, and like you, I'm not exactly sure when the PVT system kicked in officially, but you know, in 2001 PVT wasn't common, and the ECZ was the Central Tabulation System was the final authority, and so there was a chance that there could be some, you know, doctoring of numbers somewhere along the line. But the unfortunate thing is that, you know, however, is that the militancy against rigging that, I think it has gone to an unfortunate extent of confiscating ballot boxes, impounding ECZ trucks. I think it's quite hard to steal elections in Zambia these days, and that, you know, maybe we can go into detail about this later. But I think it's important at some point that all participants in the process, agree to the rules of the game, and if possible, negotiate to the change of the rules before the game begins. And that once you are in the game and you agree to participate in the game using the existing rules. It's a mark of true sportsmanship to honor the result, and this is what lacks in Africa, in Zambia included. You know, people have rigging claims even before the elections are made, done, and even we have it. It's very rare to see somebody admit a loss or congratulate the victor. You know, a loss is always perceived as a result of malpractice. I think it's a culture that we need to change. We need to address that. So I mean, in conclusion, I think there are some plausible positions to claim that the election by Mwanawasa was rigged, because even the flow of results and how Mazoka was leading for quite a long time, and then somehow suddenly, you know, ballots that had been delayed somewhere in a stuck place because of flooding, you know, started pouring in, and Mwanawasa started, you know, overtaking him. I think that was quite suspicious. But I mean, another thing that I didn't mention earlier when I was making the comparison between Mazoka and HH, I think I do give HH some credit for growing the movement beyond the percentage levels that that Mazoka left, because of course at Mazoka's time it was the first past the post system where the victor needed only to have the majority and not necessarily beat the 50+1 threshold. But I mean, HH has grown the movement to go beyond that and even get to the 50% threshold, which is pretty impressive. But I think the underlying dynamics may not, you know, absolutely credit just his personal charisma or strategy. I think it goes beyond that. And I mentioned in my article about, you know, the voting system in Zambia, and I know we can get into that again, you know, where you know there is a process of voting emotionally rather than strategically. So I mean, mm-hmm. if you're interested, we can get into that later as well. So I think, yeah, that's about it for that question.
Okay. Let me allow my colleagues before we... Our final question is going to be, what do we do? What is the way forward? Or how does the President Lungu unite the country? Or how do we... Whichever the question is. Dr. Kalonde, you have any question for Dr. Nyirenda?
Dr. Nyirenda, I think when we had this conversation, me and you, we didn't discuss this one. Currently, we are having a lot of problems and the finger-pointing, more especially regarding tribe or tribalism. Mm-hmm. With mm-hmm. your interaction with the Mr. Mazoka, who I think is the one of the beloved, may so is rest in peace, actually, sons of the soil, did you at any point observe inclination to tribalism in him?
Okay, that's a very good question. Very, very good question. He, you know, the thing is, you cannot separate our identity from anybody, you know, and the truth is he was Tonga, and there would be times when he would want to express himself in Tonga, you know, and some people would want to, you know, point to that as an element of tribalism. But I mean, I think that was really shallow, because sometimes we find the best expressions to how we want to express ourselves in our native languages. And so that shouldn't be held against us. I think he built a national umbrella. That's what he tried to do. He still faced the tribalism tag. And you know, that concerning the tribalism tag, I think it's not just an issue that is a Southern Province problem. I think even people that also capitalize on that for their own political gains, I think that is equally a problem, because it's a problem where if you stereotype people will feel offended and they'll start grouping up as a group and then trying to react to the rest. But then for those that are also perpetuating those stereotypes and tags, I think they're equally culpable. But in Mazoka himself, I did not see an element of tribe. He always tried to to keep away from it and to build national character in his movement, and also to engage different people of all walks of life and all tribal orientation to rally behind him. Even in the issue like I talked about earlier about the Freemasonry that we confronted him, he was very, you know, I excused him on that front because, you know, it's either he, you know, the rest of the country didn't know what Freemasonry was, or that he was ignorant about it. Because when we asked him about it, he says he didn't deny that he was part of the Freemasons. What he said was, I don't see what problems people have with that, because, you know, as far as I'm concerned, it's more like a Rotary Club where we do good for people. And so, I mean, he ended up having this perspective that showed an innocent understanding about it. So I think all in all, the meeting that we had with him to inquire about the tribal tag and to inquire about Freemasonry, I came back satisfied, thinking that this man is in fact, at least at the conscious level, at his, at his heart level, I think these are not things that he's dealing with, but he's having to navigate leading people who may have these, especially the tribal elements, navigate it so, you know, carefully that it doesn't become like a time bomb that will implode within the party. And I think he did a good job at it. Dr. Kalonde.
Hello. I'm sorry. I had muted myself. I'm sorry. I mute when I'm listening. Yeah, because I don't want to disturb people. Yeah, actually, my question comes from the situation that is prevailing today. Having tagged most of the people are saying, you ask them, they tagged the, our colleague or one of the statesmen. I can say the statesman now, HH, because of his position that he holds in society and leading a party of that magnitude. They've tagged him to be tribalist just because he's a Tonga. And I'm looking at Mazoka, having been a Tonga also. That's why I asked if at all Mazoka was a tribalist, because I find it very disheartening that we as a country, we have swayed away from the truth, or from telling the truth, or from learning about the other party by using a tribal tag, which alienates them from being part of us. And I'm literally concerned if at all when we say the Tongas are tribalists, then we are going to say the Kaundas are tribalists because they are supporting all the people from Northwestern Province. They are tribalists because they are supporting these tribalists. So it is quite disheartening that we alienate people because we just, you know, it is the usage of that tag to perpetuate our need or our stay in government. That is where things, and without giving the other people chance, and that's where my concern is, and that's why I asked if Mazoka was a tribalist. And Mazoka was not a tribalist. How do we tag HH as a tribalist when, in fact, probably HH went into power through that sympathy vote? You know how people are sympathetic. Somebody comes in, hey, I want to be a leader, and I have this, I have that. Then people say, hey, I think this person could be, and I don't remember. It is very painful to me as Kalonde. When Ibrahim Mokola died in Chifubu, in Kabushi, when Abraham Mokola died, I was the next person who was supposed to go into that position as MP for that area. I was just a teacher, but, hey, I had some political clout. Now, when Chief Nkambo from Copper Belt in the Rundora Rural came in and said, apart from Mutondo, Pameno Mutondo. That's the word he used. Apart from Mutondo. Mutondo is a tree. Apart from Mutondo, Pameno Mutondo. And we changed, you know, I was removed from the line, and we ended up having Peter Chintala as our MP in Kabushi that time. So could that have been the problem?
for the sake of time, I need to cut you short because
let me just ask you, at
a certain point, we need to connect somebody from Zambia who was there when Dr. Mumba was arrested, and I want us to make a good conclusion of our discussion with Dr. Nyerenda. Just hold on in connecting Honorable Nkombo until I signal to you. Let's go to Kambo. I asked if you had a question. You don't have anything?
No, I don't have a question really. I read your article, Doctor, and I should say it was a really good article. I have, of course, like you said, every opinion is like a nose as a hose. I think that I do have some opinions, and maybe you can speak to these quickly. First of all, in Zambia, elections, really, when you look at the rise of SATA and RB, for example, SATA and RB election was a change election, just as Chiluwani Kaunda was a change election, because there was a perception of RB by the people that he was so corrupt, and SATA rode that public perception to victory. I think that we have to be, and I'm alluding to your assertion that we vote emotionally and angrily, but there is no way of removing emotion when people are feeling the pain of somebody's corruption, you know. So I think that was a change election in my view. And I am in agreement with you, actually. I have very, very strong suspicions from personal experience, without going into details. I think Anderson Mazoka's death, for all the conspiracy theorists out there, I think it's very, very suspicious. In the same vein as Ronald Penza's death was very, very suspicious. Mm-hmm. I think that the Mwanawasa Mazoka election was also very, very suspicious. That election was stolen, and I wish they had evidence to prove to that fact. But all in all, I think that your article gives us a very good rubric for moving forward and considering the actions of our political leaders in terms of our future as Zambians.
Thank you very much for your compliments. And Pastor Nathan, do I have time to respond to that, or should we move to?
I think let's move to another point, because I want us to conclude well. Titus, please go ahead.
That's Titus. Okay.
Yes.
I mean, there have been a lot of these blanketing of tribal and all these things, but let's give credit where credit belongs. I mean, Kaunda came to Nkumbula. Although Nkumbula is not really Tonga, but for you guys it's Tonga, it's Ira, which is exactly what HH is. And as a Tonga speaking, I think one has to understand why even people get respect. As a Tonga person, you guys have a blanket thing. A Tonga, with the traditions that they have, one, you have to be economically sound through farming, cattle rearing, and all the above. And that's why you're going to see that certain people, they'll have those things, but they're not looked as a Tonga person. I'm talking VJ and the rest. If you are economically sound as a Tonga and you prove, then you gain respect from the South. Anybody who attends and who does things corruptly, whichever way you got your money, and you cannot trust that this person, because to get a big farm and run that, you are proving. It's like just credit here. If you have good credit in America, they can give you anything. But for you to entertain that good credit, there's so many things you have to do to maintain that. Once you do that, the banks look at you just as anybody. It doesn't matter where you're coming from, whatever. As long as you have good credit, whether in New York or in Midland or Minnesota, it doesn't matter. And this is what qualifies Tonga people. They sell out Tonga people that you can take to Rowan or wherever and make them MP and then make them minister and bring them to Southern Province to try and do anything. People shy away because the same people are going to quantify that person as, what did you do for politics? Did you attain what makes you your tribal label? Before we get to anybody else. And if you check on all those things, you're going to find out that there's that leverage. Mazoka was mm-hmm. somebody who was mingled around the Copper Belt in terms of up to Kawe as a Zambia Railways person. And this is what, again, people from the north relate to a Tonga who can speak Tonga, who can relate with them because he has mingled around them. Most, that person would be more preferred than any other person if they didn't mingle in the northern and they cannot engage properly because they don't have that lineage. It's mm-hmm. very difficult for somebody to do that. This is a little bit of something that was working around HH when he came in, didn't have any mm-hmm. political clientele, and to make himself a political person, he did not have a way to engage with people. And this is where they found a way to start pushing him as he's a tribalist, he's what and what.
Mm.
Those things are pushed. But they were trying to succeed because of that clientele. But they're failing because economically he has proved himself.
Michael, just please wind up. We have an issue with time here.
Yeah. Okay. Sorry about that. I just want to make sure I lay it down so people understand why somebody like an HH will be favored, because they've proved themselves not corruptly to get to the money. Secondly, they've proved themselves. When you talk about farms or whatever, people have respect for that.
Mm. Well, okay, let Dr. Nyirenda respond.
Nathan,
if you,
Dr.
Yes,
Nathan,
go ahead,
I think let
me
quickly respond. So I think the observations that the individual, that the colleague that just spoke, are good observations. And I think we've got to realize that most of these divisions that we face at the moment in modern-day Zambia are more artificial than they are real. You know, during the post-colonial period, the tribal element was actually an instrument that the colonialists used as a divide-and-rule strategy, which pervaded our society into the post-colonial period. And our, you know, frontrunners like Kaunda tried to deal with that using balanced government, using the One Zambia, One Nation strategy. But I mean, they also had political ends, and because of that, they didn't really effectively deal with it. So we are dealing with a problem that we can't run away from. It does exist either by perception or either by manipulation of politicians. But I think we need to come to a place where we realize that, you know what, Zambia now is, in more senses than one, a post-tribal society, because there are so many intermarriages, and even the definition of tribe itself is, in the strictest sense, doesn't really exist, because you have people who are one quarter this, one quarter that, half this, half that, you know what I mean, and speak so many languages, you know. So I think that's what we need to wake up as a nation and realize that I think we've let certain mistrust and certain things carry on for long that really, I think, our leadership needs to start working on now. But I think what you say is very, very important. And for lack of time, I'll end it.
In our last discussion, I don't know, but to say, were you there? I don't know if you had a comment or question for Dr. Nyirenda.
Yeah. Okay. Yes, I did, but I'm just going to listen because with the current situation, I didn't find anything to compare with what we're going through right now. And, you know, I'll just listen, Vanessa.
Okay, that's fine. I didn't want to pass you
thank
by
you for
in
the
case
opportunity.
You had the, yeah,
thank you.
Thank
you.
You had the comment. I was about to say, Dr. Nyirenda, in our previous discussion in an earlier show, we had my colleague Roger, who asked you a question from Canada, raised the issue of what is the way forward? Where do we go
mm-hmm.
from here? Even based
mm-hmm.
on the
mm-hmm.
tribalism thing that Titus just ended with here, there are a lot of things we haven't discussed that you and I said we're going to discuss. Obviously, there's going
mm-hmm.
to be a part two when your second article comes out. The simple question
mm-hmm.
is, where do we go from here as a nation?
Okay, I think you know, the president-elect has a huge task at hand.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is not a time for a victory lap. He has a very huge responsibility that he has to ensure that the glue that holds us together as a nation is reinforced. Like I mentioned earlier, I think we have allowed intolerance to really creep into our society in a sense, to such an extent that you can't have even a simple civil debate without name-calling and insult coming up. You know, I'm very impressed that up to this point on this discussion, we've had a very objective and very professional debate. But if you look at online responses, if you look at listen into calls back home, like phone-in programs, you see that there's a lot of intolerance. Now, I won't venture much into this discussion because this also formed part of the article that I'm drafting as a way to, you know, moving forward, etc. So I'll kind of just give you a dessert so that you may have the interest to to read the second article. But you know, generally what we observe as tribalism, even abuse of public order act, you know, the abuse of the media, etc. All these are manifestations of intolerance. And intolerance is really inimical to the ideas of a free society in which coexistence of, you know, tribe, race, ideology, political and religious diversity exists. And we need to get to a place where there is deliberate effort over and above just the slogan of One Zambia, One Nation, where the leadership decides to say we as a society are going to aggressively and proactively start sensitizing our nation to our unity. And I think maybe it starts with things like maybe adding to the curriculum in our schools on multiculturalism, you know, just letting people know that all tribes are important and that we all coexist as a country. And maybe not just leaving it at multiculturalism, even for the older Zambians, if it could be incorporated in workplaces when they are being hired or when they have seminars to say, you know, to have a training on multiculturalism. I think this goes beyond just saying we are one Zambia, one nation, we're a peace-loving Christian country, because all that is talk. I think we need to really ensure that there is manifestation of elements of unity that are coming out through real tangible strategies and programs to make people know and know the importance of unity. So I think, again, I'll end there, but my article will, you know, will go more in depth about, you know, some of the things that we can do to proceed as a nation, especially regarding these things that, you know, ail us as a society.
Excellent. Yeah, I believe you've done your part, Dr. Nyirenda, for today. There's a lot to talk about and to discuss, to address, and to educate and inform. It's a long process. It's a journey, like somebody referred, used a terminology here, whom a guest we had to say, the journey has begun and we need to push it and foster it. Ladies and gentlemen, that was our guest today, Dr. Joshua Nyirenda. And like I said at the beginning, he's coming to the show, was prompted by an article he has written. You saw what you reap what you saw, rather. Lessons from Zambia's election, you can search for it on Lusaka Times. Just type in the name, Dr. Joshua Nyirenda, and the article will come up. Dr. Nyirenda, thank you.
Thank you so much. Looking forward to a continued conversation.
Yes, we need to do this again, and we appreciate everybody listening online who tuned in to listen to Dr. Nyirenda. Ramonica, thank you for calling in. We appreciate you. And please follow us. We are always on this forum every Saturday morning, starting at 3 Zambian time, which is 1500 hours. Okay, that was Dr. Nyirenda. We are trying to connect to Zambia to speak to somebody who was there when Mumba was being arrested. We just want to learn what was happening and to understand the things that were happening there. The number we were given of Honorable Nkombo, we have tried, Somme Rogers tried, but he was trying, and it's not getting through. Let's see what we can do right there. Where is Tambo, do you have any latest information from Zambia?
No, I don't. Other than I've just been monitoring Dr. Mumba's Facebook, and, you know, there's just, you know, there are no charges that have been brought against him. He has been denied bail. And so it's unclear as to the reason why he's been arrested. So that's where we stand, I guess.
So basically, he has been arrested. That has been established.
Yes. Oh, yes, it has. He has been arrested. In fact, if you go to Hakainde Hichilema's Facebook, you actually see the video of the arrest with him at Woodland Station. Dr. Mumba's Facebook page has also some information, and of course, Elias Munsha is reacting to the arrest. And so, as long as those things are happening, it's legit. Yeah, so.
Actually, Wankama, I called, as we are talking, I called somebody in Zambia, in Lusaka, who has been very close to these things, and he confirmed that he has been arrested. And the guy was driving, going to Woodlands, because he lives in Woodlands, so he was trying to go to prove it. So that's where we ended, but he said he has been arrested.
Okay. We're trying to...
Wankama, is it possible, does he have a lawyer that we can talk to, anybody that's closer to him?
That's what I'm trying to do. I'm sending messages to everybody I know who's close to Dr. Mumba. First of all, we were given Honorable Nkombo's number. We've tried. It's giving a busy tone, which I don't think a cell phone is supposed to. A cell phone is supposed to ring, and whether somebody's on the phone or not. And then I'm trying to get a hold of the person who was, some of you remember Pastor Ruben Sambo. He was the Secretary General in the Nevers Mumba administration of MMD. Now there are two factions. He is the one I'm trying to get, but there is no... I don't know, but anyway, it's trying to connect him. I don't know where we are on that. We'll see if we can get him. We just want somebody to make a comment and give us some details of what has transpired on the ground.
Do you think he will be going too far to ask his wife? To call his wife, or just it's better we leave out of this. You think? Can we talk to his wife?
To Dr. Mumba's wife?
Yeah.
No, I don't know. I wouldn't like to go that route. I don't have a number anyway. So, but Sambo is not answering, right? Right, Sewe?
No, he's not answering. No, even earlier, you know, I tried to call Dr. Mumba's number. He wasn't going through. But it's not answering. That's correct. I'm sorry.
Oh, okay. That's
it's
fine.
Yeah.
No, I guess his number is not going to pick up. Probably they are holding it or something.
Well, Nathan.
Yes.
Here from HH's video, he's just been saying that I guess Dr. Mumba has been arrested for merely trespassing at ZMBC. they're calling it criminal trespass. And so that's what they have gone after him against. And they have denied him bond or bail.
Okay. I guess that's what goes on in Zambia. They are trying to find a way to silence, is that what it is? To silence the opposition. Or like Dr. Nyirenda has been telling us here, our levels of intolerance are so high that this country, which is called the Christian, you see, that's why I've always, I'll tell you this, Dr. Nyirenda. That's why from the beginning, a lot of people find it difficult to believe when I say that the issues with Zambia being declared a Christian nation. I had the issue with that. how do you have an issue with that when you are a pastor? I have an issue with that. The way, don't do something for the sake of doing. All that was, and now I think I can be proven right, that was just trying to get political mileage. And that's exactly mm-hmm. what President Lungu is doing right now. Because he realizes...
Our politicians, Nathan, they've understood. And this all Freemason thing you were discussing, it is one mm-hmm. way our level of understanding, our people level of understanding, when someone can show himself they are humble enough, they are in church, they can say one or two verses, that is the way to get your votes. They've understood our politicians. They've understood that. Whether our people will reach, when or whether they will reach that stage where they will understand the politicians are really getting us for a ride, we don't know. But I think they will. It happened with Chiluba. When his time came, we didn't care whether he was a born-again Christian or not. We told him to go. So, yes, for now, they came as a Christian nation. All this intimidation. I just wanted to comment very, very quickly, Nathan, the time is mm-hmm. gone. When Dr. Nyirenda said it is very hard to rig election in Zambia. I want to disagree a little bit because last July when I was in Zambia, I reported to you guys the amount of intimidation which was in Zambia. I was talking to my sister in Zambia. I think she's listening right now. The rigging does not only happen at the day when they are counting or when they are voting.
Exactly.
The rigging was done even before the election. The election was mm-hmm. Was done. 30 minutes in Kitwe, you could watch the entire news. ZNBC, you never heard anything about mm-hmm. the opposition. Mm-hmm. You went to Lusaka. The UPND were not allowed to put on their party regalia. There was mm-hmm. that kind of intimidation. To me, that's where rigging started from. We saw how they'll be having a meeting here today in Luapula, the GBM, and people want to have a meeting. Oh, no, the president is about to come here. You can't have a meeting. That was all part of the rigging. Okay.
And this,
hello,
this is let me respond, Vanessa.
Mm-hmm.
Please. So, actually, if you read my article, you wouldn't be disagreeing with me. You'd actually be agreeing with me because my argument wasn't that was that the place where the rigging is taking place now, where there is room for electoral malpractice, is not at the ballot box. The precipitating events, so things like lack of free media coverage, lack of the abuse of the Public Order Act, and just the intimidation and beating up of people. That's where the electoral malpractice happens. You know, so if we can agree on the rules about that process, and ensure that when people get into the election period, that has been agreed upon, I think. That's where the work needs to happen now, because you are right. If people are going to be intimidated to come and hear the message from the opposition, you know, it's not fair.
Hello?
Dr. Nyirenda, hold on. Yes, Batsebe.
Okay.
Is it possible that we can stand for 10 minutes? She agreed to talk to us, but she's driving right now, and she said if we can give her 10 minutes, she'll
pull 10
off,
minutes
for
sure. We only have 10 minutes. Just
is it possible? What can we do? What can we do to stay on for another half an hour? Is it possible?
Nothing.
No, nothing.
It will be creating another show. These things are time. So our time is going to be expiring like in 6 minutes time.
In 6 minutes time, yeah. Mm-hmm. Just tell her that we just want her to make a statement where Dr. Mumba was arrested.
Let me try again and let me try again.
Okay.
I'll put her through if she picks up.
Just tell her 3 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Dr. Nyirenda.
Just to continue with our discussion, I think Dr. Nyirenda, humbly said he's sorry. I didn't read the article. I'm sure I'll follow it. I'll follow it up.
Yes.
On the counting mm-hmm. itself, on the counting itself, Dr. Nyerenda, I hope you can be joining us every Saturday on our radio broadcast here. I think my tag when my friends when I die, they also tell you that on my tombstone, I want someone to remember me and say I hated Lusaka. Not only that I hated Lusaka for the sake of it, but for this centralized system which has come to control every fiber of a livelihood in Zambia.
Mm-hmm.
Someone who will sell a piece of land in Zambezi, you have to go and conclude the deal in Lusaka. People are voting in Zambezi. Why do the results need to go to Lusaka to be announced? 1991,
exactly.
When we removed Kaunda, they were announced in Solwezi, they were announced in Kaputa. Why did we do what we did? So it's very, very suspicious. I've never agreed or accepted that there's anything like rigging. This one, Dr. Nyerenda, someone really needs to convince me that Mr. Churu didn't do some trickery at the counting center. I really need
The thing is, the onus right now is on the party representatives to send credible representatives in the various remote areas, so that when the votes are counted there and they sign to the document that officially documents the count, that point,
Dr. Mumba's wife is on the other line.
Okay.
Dr. Mumba's wife?
Yes.
No, Irene Murisani.
Murisani?
Where is Dr. Mumba? Where was Dr. Mumba arrested?
He was arrested at his house. He was taken from his house, apparently to go and be interviewed at the Woodlands Police Station. But when we got there, the charge of searching stolen firearms changed to criminal trespass. Apparently, he went to the JNBC studios on Thursday night, the 8th of September. He went to verify a story that had run on the 19-hour news bulletin concerning the ongoing presidential petition.
Okay.
So he went to verify because he had received a lot of calls from concerned members of the public as what the story was about, which ran on JNBC. And that is what they are using as criminal trespass.
You said the initial charge was what?
Stolen firearms.
From where? What firearms did he steal?
He didn't steal any firearms. It was a decoy for them to be able to gain access to the house of Dr. Mumba so that they could effect the arrest.
Okay. So he's being held at Woodlands, Woodland. I almost said Baptist. You see, Amano Yabu Pastor.
Yeah, that is a bailable offense. It's a bailable offense which just required two surety, working sureties, but they refused because I think the instruction was that he should spend the night in fact, weekend in the cells. So he is right now remanded in custody at Woodlands Police Station.
Okay. How would you say is the mood or response of the people to this?
Of course, the mood of the people is the one of concern because there's been a crackdown on liberties, which started with the closure of the Post newspaper and followed by the closure of another privately owned television station called Movie TV and the radio station called Common Radio. And it agitated like a systematic clampdown on the freedom of the press and various democratic freedoms.
Okay. Well, Irene, thank you for the few minutes. We shall keep in touch. Everybody, you've heard for yourself. I hope it's not the death of democracy in Zambia. Thank you for taking the time to be with us and to listen to the show, Dr. Nyerenda. We appreciate your time. Well, Irene, we'll keep in touch and
all right.
Try to find out
what... Did you manage to speak to Honorable Nkombo?
No, we failed to get through. I'll call you after this. Yes. We failed to get through.
All right. Thank you very much.
Have a great weekend, everybody.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
mkate wanga ine moyo wa chinja mama neo mtawi zonte alikumowa kudibe ntawi yona kubanda kumona hako kuipirendi kuchitoko na mumu folo hama hama ine izi wanda zota nizi taeza talema na yo mapempelo atika pena siku lina azati kumbukila oye chifu kwa lelo bantu bonse basoweza ulemu atate imwea